This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Bound to Sudan by ailing parents in his devotion to treating the poor there, American doctor Bashruf Ibnof Suleiman kept working as long as he could after fighting in Gulf Sudan's capital. For days after battles between two rival Sudanese commanders erupted in Khartoum on April 15th, a 49-year-old treated the city's wounded. He and other doctors ventured out as explosion shook the walls. Gunfire between the two factions battling for control resounded in the streets. Suleiman, a U.S.-born doctor who had divided his time and worked between Iowa City, Iowa, and Khartoum, said in one of his last messages to worried friends on Facebook last week as the fighting persisted there. Law enforcement officers say that they have no idea where a Texas man is who police say shot and killed five neighbors on Friday after they asked him to stop firing off rounds in his yard. The victims include a 9-year-old boy and a 38-year-old suspect. Francisco Urapeza fled after the shooting. San Jacinto County Sheriff Greg Capers and the FBI agent in charge say they hope an $80,000 reward will encourage someone to tip them off to his whereabouts. The FBI says officials have zero leads after nearly 2 days of searching. Pope Francis says a secret peace mission in Russia's war in Ukraine is underway, though he gave no details, and that the Vatican is willing to help facilitate the return of Ukrainian children taken to Russia during the war. Francis said during an airborne press conference Sunday en route home from Hungary that he's available to do anything. There is more at voanews.com. Again, voanews.com. This is VOA News. The Republican secretaries of state in the Ohio, West Virginia, Missouri have promoted their state's elections as fair and secure. Yet each also is navigating a fine line on how to address election fraud conspiracies as they gear up campaigns for U.S. Senate or governor in the year 2024. The split-screen messaging of Ohio's Frank LaRose, West Virginia's Mack Warner, and Missouri's Jay Ashcroft shows just how deeply election lies have buried into the party, where more than half of voters believe that Democrat Joe Biden was not legitimately elected president. Regulators continue their search for a solution to the First Republic Bank's woes over the weekend before stock markets were set to open Monday. San Francisco-based First Republic has struggled since the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank in early March, as investors and depositors have grown increasingly worried that the bank may not survive as an independent entity for much longer. The bank's stock closed at $3.51 Friday, a fraction of the roughly $170 a share it traded for a year ago. First Republic has been seen as the most likely next bank to collapse due to its high amount of uninsured deposits and exposure to low interest rates. Shortages of drugs like Adderall are growing in the United States, and experts see no clear path to resolving them for patients that can mean treatment delays, medication switches, and other hassles filling a prescription. In recent months, unexpected demand spikes, manufacturing problems, and tight ingredient supplies have contributed to shortages that stress parents and patients, as well as doctors. For some drugs, such as stimulants that treat ADHD, several factors fuel the shortage and make it hard to predict when it will end. Shortages, particularly of generic drugs, have been long-standing problems. The industry has consolidated, and some manufacturers have little incentive to solve shortages because cheap generics generate thin profits. Recapping one of our top story, a widening manhunt for a Texas gunman who fatally shot five neighbors continues, coming up empty as officers knock on doors and the governor put up $50,000 in reward money, and the FBI appeared no closer to catching the killer after nearly 2 days of searching with a team that has grown to hundreds of people. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
We'll be right back. A fragile ceasefire extended in Sudan as the humanitarian situation continues to deteriorate.
We know that ahead of this crisis, over 15 million people were in need of humanitarian assistance, and that included 8 million children.
Plus, the Biden administration braces for an expected flood of immigrants at the southern border.
We are seeing a level of migration, not just at our southern border, but throughout the hemisphere that is unprecedented.
And as Britain prepares for the coronation of King Charles III, some Commonwealth nations want to break with a distant monarchy. Today is Monday, May 1st. This is VOA's International Edition. Good morning. I'm Lori London in Washington. Sudan's army and its rival paramilitary agreed to extend a humanitarian ceasefire for another 72 hours. The decision follows international pressure to allow for the safe passage of fleeing civilians and for aid groups to get to badly needed supplies into the violence-marred country. The shaky truce has not so far stopped the clashes completely. In statements on Sunday, both sides accused the others of violations. Edward Uranian has more from Cairo.
UN envoy Volker Perthes told Arab media that he sensed that both military commander General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and Rapid Support Forces head Mohammed Hamdan Dagalo were closer to negotiations than they were previously. Burhan, however, told Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV that he would not sit down at the same table as the leader of the rebellion, as he put it. An attempt by the Egyptian foreign ministry to mediate between both sides was abruptly canceled Saturday. Dagalo told Sky News Arabia that he was ready and willing to sit down and negotiate, but that a civilian government must be established as quickly as possible. Dagalo also claimed that his men were observing the truce, but that the army was still firing at them. Citizens, however, complained on social media that Dagalo's rapid support forces had raided their homes and stolen money, gold, and other possessions. VOA could not independently confirm the claims. Amateur video on social media showed burned vehicles lining the streets of a number of Khartoum's neighborhoods and dead bodies that had been covered with blankets lying in the streets. A Sudanese journalist told Arab media that many residents of Khartoum were trying to flee the capital during intermittent periods of calm, but that a bus ticket to the northern border of the country facing Egypt has now reached the astronomical price of $600. A ticket normally costs about $125. Some fruit and vegetable markets were reported to be open, but witnesses complained that many banks and ATMs had run out of money because of the prolonged fighting. Adel, a Sudanese businessman, told VOA that his neighborhood in Omdurman was being subjected to periodic shelling and airstrikes from both sides in the conflict.
We are still safe somehow, and the bombing is continuing also, is still continuing now. During my speaking also, you may listen to the voice of a plan that to bomb from place to place, but we are safe.
Arab media showed video of fighting continuing in the western Darfur province capital of Jenina, bordering the Republic of Chad. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The United States has sent a Navy ship to Sudan to help evacuate hundreds of American citizens who've been stranded in the country since the fighting broke out earlier this month. Meanwhile, as clashes continue, the UN Refugee Agency says the humanitarian situation continues to deteriorate. The first international cargo with medical supplies landed Sunday in Port Sudan. It is a glimmer of hope in Sudan, where the conflict has put thousands of innocent civilians at risk, including those of Sudanese children already severely malnourished. Veronica Balderas Iglesias has this report.
With few medical supplies, Sudanese doctors have been struggling to treat more than 4,700 people who, according to Sudan's Ministry of Health, have been injured in the conflict between the Sudanese army and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. On Sunday, however, a sign of relief. 8 tons of humanitarian aid including surgical materials, arrived in Port Sudan. Patrick Yosef is with the International Committee of the Red Cross.
I hope this will be only the first of a number of batches that will come, will be extremely crucial for the hospitals to be able to cater for the needs of thousands of people that are flocking to their doors and waiting to get medical assistance.
The conflict has also put the lives of more than 600,000 underfed Sudanese children in peril. They were already suffering from acute malnutrition before the conflict began, warned UNICEF's chief of field operations in Sudan, Jill Lawler.
We know that ahead of this crisis, over 15 million people were in need of humanitarian assistance, and that included 8 million children. All the aerial bombardments, the attacks on facilities, the attacks on water infrastructure, the destruction of vital vaccine, that figure is going to go up.
The Sudanese who are dual nationals have flocked to Port Sudan, hoping to be evacuated. Professor Ali, who declined to provide his last name, told the Associated Press that he has a visa for the United Kingdom.
If you have, a foreign passport or anything that will actually give you the chance to go outside, you will take it. And this is why everybody here is doing his best to go out of Sudan.
Many of the internally displaced, however, must rely on the generosity of strangers for accommodation and food. Wadi Halfa's resident, Naama Jabal Sayed Hassan, bakes bread for them near the border with Egypt.
The door of our house is open. We will welcome any guests who come to us. We only hope that God will stop the wars and that both parties will agree to solve the situation.
The United Nations estimates that 75,000 people have been displaced by the fighting in Khartoum and Darfur, among other regions. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says a widely anticipated spring counteroffensive will push on without American fighter jets in the skies. He said waiting to train troops on advanced aircraft could signal a timeline to Russian forces on the ground. This as more deadly attacks have hit Ukraine. VOA's Arash Arbasadi has more.
Ukrainian forces trained for battle somewhere in the southeastern Zaporizhia region late last week. Ukraine is expected to launch a long-anticipated spring counteroffensive following Russia's winter offensive, resulting in small gains despite bloody fighting. For months, Kyiv has requested advanced weaponry from the West, most recently asking for F-16 fighter jets or similar aircraft. To date, that has not happened in the public eye. Ukraine's president says there's no time left and that the counteroffensive will happen with or without advanced fighter jets.
Frankly speaking, it would help us a lot. But we also understand that we can't drag the counteroffensive out, which is why we'll start before we receive F-16s or other models. We'll start and go forward, while simultaneously, I think, receiving Western fighter craft is very important.
Zelensky spoke just one day after emergency workers and residents fought to unearth survivors of cruise missile strikes on a 9-story residential building. The Ukrainian Air Force says it shot down 21 of the 23 missiles launched by Russian aircraft, but the ones that did get through killed at least 23 people. In a video posted by the country's press service, Zelensky referred to Russia as a terrorist state, saying specifically, "Not only those who give orders, you are all terrorists and murderers, and you must be punished." Meanwhile, in the Donetsk region, a Russian drone strike hit another civilian target. A 31-year-old woman and her 2-year-old daughter were killed in the eastern city of Dnipro. In Crimea, at a massive fire at an oil facility, a possible sign of what's to come with or without Western fighter jets. The Russian-appointed official in this region blamed the blaze on a drone strike and reported no casualties. According to the Associated Press, the official didn't clarify the drone's origin, but Ukrainian drones have increasingly targeted Crimea in recent weeks. If and when Ukraine launches its counteroffensive, it will meet heavily fortified Russian positions months in the making, packed with landmines, tanks, and troops. Arash Arbasadi, VOA News.
The Biden administration is bracing for an expected flood of migrants at the southern border once COVID restrictions expire on May 11th.
This is a really tough challenge and has been, as we all recognize, for years and years. We are seeing a level of migration, not just at our southern border, but throughout the hemisphere that is unprecedented.
In an interview with NBC's Meet the Press on Sunday, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said that while the administration prepares to head off the expected influx, Congress needs to enact true immigration reform and not rely on the use of health restrictions. Here are some of the stories we are following from around the world. Paraguay's ruling candidate Santiago Peña scored a big win in the country's presidential election Sunday, tightening the conservative Colorado Party's political grip in the country and diffusing fears about the possible end of long-standing diplomatic ties with Taiwan. His central-left rival had argued for switching allegiance to China. The United States has urged China over the weekend to stop harassing Philippine vessels in the South China Sea, pledging to stand with the Philippines following another maritime confrontation between the two Asian countries. The U.S. State Department called on Beijing to, quote, desist from its provocative and unsafe conduct. And Pope Francis on Sunday revealed that a secret peace mission in Russia's war in Ukraine is underway, though he gave no details, and did say the Vatican is willing to help facilitate the return of Ukrainian children taken to Russia during the war. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA has released highly detailed images from the James Webb Space Telescope of a massive star in its rarely seen late stage before its death. In this phase of its evolution, the giant star becomes known as a Wolf-Rayet star, which is experiencing its final burst of activity before blowing up in a spectacular supernova. The newly released images are actually among the first captured by the JWST in June 2022. The star is called WR for Wolf-Rayet 124. NASA says it has a mass 30 times that of our sun, and at its current stage has cast off an amount of matter equal to about 10 suns, which in turn has formed a surrounding nebula of dust and gas. WR-124 is located about 15,000 light-years away in the constellation Sagitta. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Lori London. Britain is preparing for the coronation of King Charles III, due to take place on May 6th. Dozens of world leaders and heads of state have been invited to the historic ceremony, while millions are expected to watch it on television. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
In the skies and on the ground, rehearsals are underway for King Charles III's coronation. It will be an event full of extraordinary pomp and pageantry. Hundreds of thousands of people are expected to line the route from Buckingham Palace to Westminster Abbey. Every detail of the ceremony has historical and religious meaning. Charles will be anointed with holy oil brought from Jerusalem. The processional cross includes fragments said to be from the true cross on which Jesus was crucified, given by Pope Francis. Richard Fitzwilliams is a royal commentator.
The coronation goes back over 1,000 years, since 973 AD, when King Edgar was crowned in Bath. The first coronation at Westminster Abbey that we know occurred was William the Conqueror in 1066, and the actual ritual has changed little over the centuries.
Charles officially became king after the passing of his mother, Queen Elizabeth II, on September 8th. The coronation is also a chance for the British public to celebrate their new monarch. Community street parties are planned across Britain. The event will echo Elizabeth's coronation 70 years ago, but there will be important differences. Again, Richard Fitzwilliams.
You also had a 25-year-old queen. I mean, here, and this is a problem with King Charles and Queen Camilla, and that is their age.
That's not the only challenge for the 74-year-old king. A recent poll showed 58% of the public supports the monarchy, but among 18 to 24-year-olds, support is just 32%. Again, Richard Fitzwilliams.
I think that he realises that the challenges ahead, so far as the monarchy is concerned, it's very important that there should be some form of acceptance of the monarchy's links to the slave trade in past years. His environmental credentials are impeccable. I mean, that appeals very considerably to a younger base.
The fallout of Prince Harry and Meghan's split from the royal family amid accusations of racism denied by the palace continues to overshadow the monarchy. Charles's brother, Prince Andrew, has been effectively banished after settling a sex assault case. Some see dangers ahead for the monarchy. Robert Hardman is a royal author.
The big threat to the future of the House of Windsor is not mobs storming the gate, it's not revolution. It's becoming irrelevant. They understand that. You've got to, the Queen always used to say, we have to be seen to be believed. They have to play a part in national life.
The royal family will hope that the coronation provides an opportunity for public celebration and for renewal of the monarchy itself. But it will also mark a new chapter with new challenges that King Charles at its head will have to navigate to keep the royal family relevant in the 21st century. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Meanwhile, Charles III is about to be crowned the king, but not just of Britain, also the Commonwealth nations like Jamaica. But on the streets of the capital of Kingston, many Jamaicans want a break with a distant monarchy linked to slavery and colonialism. From Reuters, Lucy Fielder has the story.
Former British colony Jamaica is distinctly cool on its new head of state as Britain prepares to celebrate King Charles's coronation. Happy and glorious, as the UK's national anthem goes, isn't how many on the streets of Kingston would describe the two countries' history. Given a bitter legacy of slavery and a plantation economy that enriched some Britons, but left many Jamaicans poor. The West Indian country of almost 3 million people remains under the British monarchy as part of the Commonwealth. David Brown is among many who can't see why.
We're supposed to have independence. So if we have independence, why would we need another head of state from abroad?
We are moving on, and we intend to...
Prime Minister Andrew Holness told Prince William last year that Jamaica wants to become a republic. In March, he announced a constitutional reform committee to assist in the transition. Jamaica became independent in 1962, when Queen Elizabeth was on the throne. Affection for her and waves of immigration to Britain kept links alive. But even before Elizabeth's death last year, republican sentiment was growing.
I think Jamaican people want the right to elect their head of state.
Stephen Golding is president of the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Communities League.
You know, it's really about our sovereignty and exercising our independence. And given the atrocities that we suffered through the period of enslavement, through the colonial period, I think it is the final piece of the puzzle when it comes to our sovereignty as an independent nation.
About 600,000 Africans were brought to Jamaica as slaves between the 15th and 19th centuries, the National Library of Jamaica says. The British government was involved in the Atlantic slave trade and reimbursed plantation owners when slavery was abolished in 1834. During a visit by Prince William and Catherine last year, Jamaican protesters demanded an apology. William expressed profound sorrow over slavery, as has Charles.
I cannot describe the depths of my personal sorrow.
But the royals have stopped short of a formal apology.
It's an undeniable truth that the slaves should also be compensated. Because if you say slavery is wrong, How do you justify compensating the slave owners?
Danielle Archer is spokesperson for the Advocates Network, which planned those protests.
Take a trip to any Caribbean island, any country that was under the grip of colonialism. You will see poverty. You will see where the resources have been taken from the land and placed in the wealthy.
Charles has acknowledged growing Republican sentiment in some Commonwealth nations and said it was for them to decide. Barbados ditched the monarchy in 2021, and others are keen to follow. In Jamaica, that would require votes in both houses of parliament and a national referendum.
That was Lucy Fielder with Reuters reporting. Well, Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band have a new backup singer, Michelle Obama. While attending a Springsteen concert in Barcelona, Spain over the weekend, the former First Lady, tambourine in hand, joined the rock musician on stage for at least one song. And in videos posted on social media, Obama seemed to be jamming right along with Springsteen and his band during their performance of Glory Days. After stepping in time and shaking her tambourine along her fellow backup singer, she shared a brief but sweet moment with Springsteen toward the center of the stage. This has been International Edition on Voice of America. Thanks so much to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Daryl Smith. Thank you for joining us. For videos, pictures, stories, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Lori London in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's been 50 years since the war between the United States and Vietnam ended, and nearly 28 years since the two countries normalized relations. In that time, the two nations have forged a relationship that is robust, dynamic, and consequential, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken during a recent visit to Hanoi. His focus, said Secretary Blinken, remained on how the United States can continue to support Vietnam's success, which is good for the Vietnamese people, for Americans, and indeed for the entire region.
Our countries are collaborating on an incredibly broad range of shared interests, and we believe that by supporting Vietnam's ambitions, we advance our own, from the creation of American jobs and the strengthening of American businesses, to progress on the climate crisis that affects all of us, to preventing pandemics.
The United States and Vietnam work together on the international stage to promote broad-based prosperity in Vietnam and throughout the region, said Secretary Blinken. We're also growing our bilateral economic partnership, he said.
The U.S. is helping Vietnam double down on key reforms it's embraced, including on labor, intellectual property, fair trade, which have made it one of the fastest-growing economies in the world. We believe that Vietnam can achieve its goal of becoming a connected, high-income country by 2045 by pursuing growth that lifts up all communities while building resilience to adapt to climate change.
Indeed, we know Vietnam is increasingly vulnerable to threats posed by the climate crisis, said Secretary Blinken.
As Vietnam takes steps to become a leader on climate energy transition, the United States is investing in that tremendous potential. We're launching new bilateral climate initiatives, which do everything from conserving ecosystems and reducing emissions from rice farming in the Mekong Delta to expanding a market-driven clean energy system and scaling up adoption of electric vehicles to leveraging our private sectors to drive climate action.
And last but not least, we're finalizing the transfer of the third U.S. Coast Guard cutter to Vietnam, complementing a fleet of 24 patrol boats and other equipment, training, and operational facilities that we have provided since 2016. All of these efforts bolster Vietnam's capacity to contribute to maritime peace and stability in the South China Sea, said Secretary Blinken. The United States is committed to supporting a strong, prosperous, independent, and resilient Vietnam, and we respect Vietnam's rights to shape its future under its own political system.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.